Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Max 6 Entrepreneurial Center right here in Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. And I am very excited to invite back to the studio today, Heather Locke, owner and founder of Hammersmith Support. Welcome to the studio, Heather.
Thank you, Karen. It's so nice to have an opportunity to chat with you.
I agree. And I'm ecstatic that to learn that you will be with John Ray on the Nashville Business Radio X show here. I think you said in a couple weeks or next week even?
Next week.
You're doing the speaker circuit, right? So shout out to John Ray and the team in Nashville. And in a moment, of course, we'll let people hear who you are and what Hammersmith Support does. But I got to say, Nashville, and you're opening a new branch there. So let's lead with that and let's back up the train. I'm very excited for you and congratulations on that. I saw it, I think, on LinkedIn, an announcement like, hey, we're doing it. So back up, tell us who Hammersmith Support is for our listeners who aren't familiar with you. And then how did you land there? Why this as a career?
So Hammersmith Support is a certified women-owned web development company. We specialize in design, development, hosting, and maintenance of WordPress websites. And I think, you know, really what kind of sets us apart and who we are is our core values. And we really focus on customer service, on transparency, and giving back to the community. It's a big part of us.
Very good. And what is your journey to becoming a business owner? And how long have you been at the helm of Hammersmith Support?
I moved to Phoenix. I'm originally from Tennessee. Spoiler alert. And I moved to Phoenix in 1998. I had just graduated college and I went to work for a small business with a couple of entrepreneurs at the helm. And it was very dynamic. We were doing something different every day. And I would say that's really kind of when I got the bug. You know, I started seeing them make their own decisions and pivot on a dime. And I was there when 9/11 happened and we had clients in the airline industry. And so we made a lot of quick changes and just the excitement of it, I would say, and just the control that the owners had really inspired me. And I went from worked there about 10 years. And then I worked for an agency. And the whole time I always did moonlighting on the side. I was always, oh, Heather, go build your website, you know, and, you know, at night after work, I would be building websites. So when I went to work for an agency, I had my daughter at the time. I was working really long hours and I just knew that wasn't a life I wanted. I was commuting, you know, 40 minutes there, 40 minutes back. And so I thought, you know, now's the time. I have these skills. I can do it. Now's the time. So I kind of joke and say I had two children at once. I had my daughter and I had my business. But I started it right about that same time. And then I went several years just kind of growing organically and just slowly building. And in about 2018, I really started to have vision for what I wanted my company to be and what I could do with it. And since then, I've really started trying to level up and just grow and get to the next level.
Great. And so now I understand why Nashville. I forgot that you had mentioned that in the post that I saw on LinkedIn. What is that like for you to now have an additional location, right? Because what you do is typically digital, right? Everything that you put out there, the service and the products that you provide are digital in nature. But what does it mean to you to now have this second location? I'm thinking tax-wise and you know, going back to see family, it makes brilliant sense. But how about for your customers and your clientele?
Well, I'm super excited. So for me, I think it's giving me some new energy. And I love the opportunity to like be able to see my family more. But I really love Nashville. I love the South. I miss it. The idea is I will go once a month and spend summers there is my plan.
There you go. Enough said.
I spent this past summer in Nashville and, you know, I think it's really good for just my creative energy to have another stimulus for just a new environment, new people, new businesses. And I think it's going to benefit both Phoenix and Nashville because I kind of bringing experience from two different markets. And so we have, I have an employee in Nashville now, and we have a co-working space. It's a very cool space kind of dedicated to women business owners that we work out of when we're there. And it's really exciting. It's getting some traction. So it's very fun.
So good. Yeah. Before we came on live, I mentioned that a dream of mine has been to have multiple studios like John, who you'll get to meet next week, is doing. I believe his original studio is in North Fulton, Atlanta, or in Georgia, North Fulton. So I think that's his second, possibly third studio. But that's the goal for me too, right? To be able to get this dialed in enough and honed in enough that then I can have multiple locations, take advantage of being in those multiple locations when it's ridiculously hot here in Arizona in the summer. Yeah, so good. So let's talk a little bit more about websites and WordPress specifically. What would you say to our listeners that that just gets you excited about WordPress, right? Because in your introduction, you mentioned specifically the support and the creation of these WordPress websites. Why WordPress?
I love WordPress. I should, right? It's my business. Yeah. But WordPress is an open source platform. And that means the code is public. Anyone can download it. It also means there is a huge industry of companies that support it, that make add-ons for it, that develop specifically for it. You can buy a plugin to do so many different things on WordPress. That comes with the good and the bad, because with it being open source, it is more vulnerable to malware and hacking. And so you have to keep it updated and maintained and secure to protect your asset. And so that's really what we, you know, the support side of our business, the maintenance side of our business specializes in is, you know, managing the WordPress website. The WordPress as a platform is amazing because you can tie it into APIs and do a lot of custom coding. I teach my clients all the time how to build their own pages that look like the rest of the site. They either have a template or they have a page, you know, some sort of fields within the page where they can modify. And over the last couple of years, I would say it just gets better because I think in December of 2019, they released their Gutenberg builder, which made it a little bit more of a visual experience for users. And the way that it renders code is very friendly to Google, just natively. And so that makes it good for SEO. And there's all kinds of plugins to enhance that. How long would you like me to talk about how much I like WordPress?
I love it. And whatever else you'd like to add, the Business Radio X website is a WordPress website as well. And I, fortunately, as a licensed partner, I don't have to manage any of that. But I know that when WordPress landed on the scene for businesses, right, it was incredible. And as more apps become available and opportunities to interact with, you know, payment systems and forms and all those things, it became more complicated and cumbersome. Even though the opportunity was greater, it was harder for the solopreneur or the business owner to do it. So of course it makes sense to have someone out there like you who's building websites and also keeping them updated and protected, you know, the blanket around the baby, as well as helping to birth the baby too.
Well, not only that too, I mean, you should always think of the website as a living document or a living asset. It is not, I think a lot of people make the mistake is they finish their website, it looks beautiful, they put it up and they forget it's even there. And it really needs changes all the time because your business changes all the time. And you have, like in your case, different guests on this show and different things you're profiling and things are happening in the world that impact your content. Your website needs to continue to evolve so that your digital presence, your digital place is always up to date with who you are as a company.
So that's really easy for us to do. As you pointed out, we have, you know, typically three or four shows in any given day, 5 days a week. So we're always updating with new content and information. Now I kind of lost my train of thought for that. So it's easy for us, but is that what you're talking about? You're helping businesses figure out what new way to present themselves. I'm kind of likening it to social media, but because, you know, when we're talking about a social presence, posting is important, right? Images, videos, audio, great content, links, that sort of stuff. But how is that different than what you're talking about when it comes to updating a website and keeping it current?
Well, it's two things. It is the, from a technical standpoint, it's the plugins and the framework and any patches that come in for any special code that you're using on the site, that needs to be kept up to date. Because as technology changes and there's new malware out there, you need to, you know, stay up with the times. As the PHP language is what WordPress is written in. So when a new version of that is updated, you need to update your site so it's using the latest code so it stays fast. Mm-hmm. So that's one element to it, into keeping the site up to date. But it's also from a content perspective. A lot of times we work with content creators, or the client creates their own content, but we help them like transition that to the website. So if that could be posting blogs, maybe they're doing a new photo shoot and they're changing out the photos on their page. An employee doesn't work there anymore. We've taken that employee down. We're putting a new employee up and adding a new bio. Maybe they're hosting an event. Maybe there's a landing page for a campaign they're doing. Really, the list is endless, and kind of how we help them kind of keep the site up to date.
That's very helpful for me to have kind of the discernment between content updates, which is where I was going, but also the safety and the coding and all the things that don't make any sense to me at all, which is, again, going back to your expertise. Love it. Tell me about best practices. I feel like we may have hit on a couple of them. What would you recommend for business owners who are either, you know, just deciding they need a website, or they know that theirs is outdated and it's time to make those updates and make a commitment to work with someone like you? What would you say are some of the best practices?
Well, I kind of have four that I usually talk to as far as, you know, kind of big buckets of best practices. And the first one is messaging. And really looking at, if you have an existing site, really looking at your site and saying, does this communicate what I do and who I am? And is it clear when I look at this page, if maybe have someone look at it that's not you, you know, just someone that's not, you know, inside the business, and say, can you tell clearly what I do? And I think, you know, that's easy for, you know, some, if you are a pet groomer, it's pretty easy to show a picture of someone, you know, grooming a pet. And you know, okay, this company provides pet grooming services. But maybe you are a consultant firm and you help businesses in the healthcare energy industry figure out how to market a device. Or, well, that's a harder story to tell visually and on the homepage. And that's, you know, maybe you need some professional copywriting or some help there, but really making it very, very clear on your homepage what you do and, you know, who you are, so that when someone sees your site, they can process that really fast. There's a pretty famous book by Donald Miller called Building a Story Brand. And he talks about when someone comes to your homepage, they should be, he calls it the caveman test. You should be able to grunt that you should be able to grunt what the website does or suppose the company does within 3 seconds of seeing it. It should be that clear that a caveman could grunt it. And that's a hard test to pass. You know, it's especially depending on your industry, it can be a hard test to pass. But I'd say first is making sure your messaging is really clear and you're communicating who you are and what you do.
Great. So that's one of the four points. Are you open to sharing the others
that's
as well?
That's fun.
Yeah, yeah. Are you okay sharing, or is that close to the vest?
Of course. No, I didn't know if you wanted to ask a question, so I paused for you.
No, I appreciate it. No, I get that, and I love the caveman test. That again, that's got to keep it basic for me. So that's great. What is another best practice that you find yourself speaking to a lot?
The second one would be having clear call to actions. Like, what do you want someone to do when they are on your website? And what is the main thing? There's going to be more than one link, but what is the main thing you want them to do? Do you want them to sign up for your mailing list? Do you want them to make a purchase? Do you want them to schedule on your Calendly or another calendar? What is it that you want them to do? And are you making that clear? Like when someone goes to the website, can they immediately find what you want them to do? And again, it seems very, very simple, but it would it'd be very easy to look at your site and be like, you know what? No, I don't see what I want them to do. And sometimes it's more of a question goes to the marketing team. Like, what is it we want people to do on their website? And sometimes it is just, we want the website to just help build the brand. So maybe we do want them to just click learn more or read more. But sometimes we might want them to schedule a consultation, which is my call to action on my homepage. And I would say with that, you know, calls to action can be like strong calls to action, like schedule a consultation or join our team, or they can be more passive, like read more or learn more, which would be more just, you know, for a getting someone into the depths or learning more about you.
Yeah, I'm thinking about our website. And in fact, Angie, my VA, just reached out the other day. She's like, I think it's time to update content on the website. So I'm like, oh, goodness. And now I'm like, messaging, yes. Clear call to actions, yes. I can see we can do a better job with that. How about the third best practice?
The third one would be functionality. Looking at your navigation, making sure your links work. The biggest thing in functionality is probably making sure that your site is viewable and usable on mobile devices. Mm-hmm. So phones, iPads, there are so many mobile devices now, but particularly phones. Most internet browsing, it's something like 60% is done via phone. So if your site is not viewable on a phone or it's clunky and it's hard to get the menu. Sometimes you're on a website on your phone, it's hard to get the menu to come up or go away. That's impacting your user experience. And so making sure all that functionality is in place and is working and you can get to, you can you do everything on your phone on the website that you can do on the desktop. It's very important. Mm-hmm.
You're making me think that as we're talking, and you've alluded to this with every point you've made, that things change so quickly digitally and the algorithms and what Google is looking for and all of that, that again, my business is in podcasting and working with my clients. I need someone who's well-versed and keeping up to all of that, to keep me safe, to keep it current, and to make sure that we're hitting all of these marks. Fantastic. So functionality, navigation, mobile devices. What's the fourth best practice then? I'm jotting these down. I'm like, okay, I got to make sure we're doing all this.
Well, the fourth one we've talked about a little bit so far, but that would be security. We'll start at the high level, making sure your site has an SSL certificate. And this is what makes it HTTPS versus HTTP.
Is it worth asking that question? So I've always wondered what an SSL certificate is, and I never knew that. I mean, I know there's a difference between HTTPS and HTTP, but is it too complicated to ask what is the difference between those two?
It's basically that there's an encryption layer over it. Oh. And so that's the simplest way to describe it. Yeah. So there's an encryption layer, and it just adds a layer of protection between the website and the user. And you notice really quickly if a site does not have SSL installed or installed correctly. When it's working, there's usually a little green lock symbol. If you're in Chrome, I think it's a green lock. It's a little different depending on the browser. Mm-hmm. But if it's not working, you might not see the page display at all, or you might see that lock look broken. And sometimes it's broken. It's maybe works fine on the homepage, but somewhere in the site, someone's added some code that's not secure. And therefore, it breaks on that page. And that's one of the things we look for in our maintenance when we check the sites every month. You know, we check that the SSL is in place all across the board. Some browsers like Chrome, if you go to a site that's insecure, it won't even show it. It'll just say, there's an error here. Do you want to continue? And it'll give you a button for like, to bypass that, but it won't even natively show it. So that's very important. The other thing, specifically with WordPress websites, is to make sure your password is strong. If your password is password or password 123, it is not strong.
Right.
Your password should be something that you cannot remember. And, you know, unless you're very clever and you know pi to like the 15th digit. but having a secure password for all users on your site and also even two-factor authentication, which is kind of a pain because you have to go to your phone to get a code. But it is a protection layer and it will help protect your site. So I highly recommend it. And doing regular security scans would be kind of the third component.
And that's part of the service you guys offer as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Tell me about SEO. How important is that? And is that your wheelhouse, your team's working with that as well for websites? How important is SEO?
So SEO, just for anyone that doesn't know, is search engine optimization. And there's kind of two levels to SEO. There is on-page SEO, which is how the page is structured. Does it have headings, paragraphs, bullets? Does it images? Are the images labeled? How many words on the page? Does the page have a description and a title? All of those things fall under on-page SEO. And on-page SEO is something that we do for our clients. We do a health check on the site. We check the structure of all the pages, make adjustments where needed, make sure the images are labeled, make sure there's descriptions and titles on every page. Off-page SEO is a little more complicated. We have a partner that we work with for off-page SEO. And that's really a process. The magic they do is really trying to list your site in directories throughout the web and get their links and get links back to your page to make your domain authority go up, which your domain authority really goes up based on how many links from other sites that have a high domain authority. And so by creating more links to your site from other sites outside of your business or your network, then you increase this domain authority and therefore it starts to move up into the rankings. And there's more involved in it than what I'm describing, but that's a primer.
Yeah. I know when I was looking at and reviewing your kind of your bio with us, you've had an opportunity to do a lot of fantastic things and work with a lot of fantastic companies throughout your career. So you already talked a little bit about why and how you decided to open Hammersmith Support and become, you know, a business owner yourself. But in the early days, before becoming a women-owned boutique technology company, tell us a little bit about your career leading up to those decisions.
So I will start way, way back.
Once upon a time, my parents decided they wanted to have a baby. Start there, no.
Yeah, well, maybe not that far. Once upon a time, I went to the University of Tennessee, and I was very interested in graphic design at the time. And there was also a lot of, technology was starting to be very popular. We had a couple of really interesting companies in Knoxville, where Tennessee is, where the university is. One was a company called CyberFlix, which was a video game company. And they were creating a CD-ROM video game on the Titanic. And they had like their own custom software where they were animating the characters and putting the voice under it. And it was really groundbreaking at the time. And I was able to intern there for like a year working on the Titanic project. And then there was another company called iPix, and they created the 360-degree like spherical images for the web. And so I also interned there. And these two experiences really kind of got me interested in interactive media. And at Tennessee, I was accepted into the College Scholars Program, which kind of lets you design your own major. And so my major was interactive media. And my mentor for that was a graphic design professor, but she was also really interested in technology. And she started a technology lab at UT. And I ended up teaching HTML to the teachers when I was in college. So I would say that's where my interest came from. And so I was, you know, building websites when there was like Netscape 4.0. I'm really dating myself, Karen. Then I moved out here. I mentioned earlier, I worked for a couple of entrepreneurs. I just wore many hats there, design, developer. I was a project manager. And near the end, I was kind of just managing a team of developers. And then from there, I went to an agency where we focused on online promotions. So think like McDonald's Monopoly, like Subway Nation, where you pull the little tab off and enter the code online. And so that got me more experienced in really application development and what all goes into kind of higher end applications and databases and making everything work online. From there, I started Hammerstone.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So exciting. And remind me again, how long you've owned the company?
I started it in 2011.
You did say that. Yep. And we just spoke about that a few minutes ago. So given that you have the design background, how important then is it to have that, the right look? I mean, all these things are important that we've talked about to make sure that it's safe and it's secure and it's updated and all those things. But I also like that you have this background and this eye for how does it look right for the end user? That is equally important or more so. Where does that fall?
And in my mind, it's one of the most important things. Yeah. I mean, that's really where my love of it comes from, is from the design angle. So yes, I mean, it's your brand. It is, think of it as the clothes you put on in the morning and what you're saying about yourself when you dress yourself is, you know, what does your website say when people look at that? And I think it's very important in helping to support your brand, communicate who your brand is. I think photography is just a huge part of it. I recommend to all my clients to get some custom photography for their site, because people buy from people. And when you just throw up, you know, stock images, it works for some sites and sometimes it's necessary, but it's so much more effective when you see the actual people and you can make that connection. And it makes your site more unique. It's custom, you know, it's your look and feel. So brand photography, I think, is very important.
Yeah. And I've seen some of the sites that you've done, Kelly Lorenzen's KLM Consulting being one of them, and your very own, right? I'm sure I've seen more too. None of them are coming to top of mind right now, but you certainly...
You've probably seen Ellen Grace Marketing as
yes,
well.
Yes, well, you're right, of course. Yeah, and I mean, fantastic. So let's talk about how do you personally know when a client is good for you? A prospective client reaches out, they want to have a conversation, they've, you know, seen one of the websites or they've met you somehow where you've been speaking. How do you know when they're a good fit?
I'm not sure I know the answer to this question.
Well, for some people, it's, look, we're looking for a specific niche or target or size of business. Lately, more and more, I'm hearing from people that, you know, we feel into the relationship to make sure it's going to be long-term and we have to be like-minded. So, I mean, I don't have an idea of where we're going to go when I ask that question. So I apologize for putting you on the spot, but I'm just curious because I know that there will be some listeners who came and listened because they trust me and they want, you know, they're looking for someone like you and others will be listening because they know you. And then there's others that through SEO are going to find us and listen to this podcast. So how, you know, when someone does reach out, what's the vetting process maybe?
Well, I would say that first off, we do work with a big variety of clients. We've worked with an international airline and we work with a solopreneur. So we do have experience with a large variety of clients. I would say sometimes I know just in the communication if it's going to be a fit. We are very consultative. I like to help lead them and I like to know that they trust my opinion and that they will accept at least some of my recommendations is important to me, and that it's just going to be a collaboration. So I would say some of that is just by feel. And, you know, sometimes, you know, when you connect with someone, you know, yes, this is going to work, or, you know, maybe they know too, this is maybe not exactly who they're looking for. But I do like clients that are open to receiving some recommendations and, you know, we'll trust the process.
Yep. That's exactly kind of what I was listening for. That's how I feel into decision making on behalf of who we are working with here at Business Radio as well, right? I've been in business long enough and been a professional long enough to know when it's a good fit. Yeah. Very good. Anything else, Heather, that I hadn't thought to ask or that that's worth mentioning as we close out the segment today?
Well, you did ask one thing that I think we kind of maybe glossed over a little bit. So I'll just touch on it. You did ask about the difference between social media and posting there versus posting on the website. Yeah. So I was going to make a point about that and I didn't. So I'll just wrap around on that one as kind of a closing point. So one of the great things about social media is, you know, it's just quick and you can put up things to kind of support your voice or support your message. But a lot of those things don't actually need to live on the website. If you're posting a quote from someone that you admire or, you know, you're asking a quiz. So social media can really be used for that content that's just maybe in support. And I think that the website content, like a test you can use is this something I want to still be on the website a year from now? And think about it as that way is more of a long-term play on the website versus a short-term on social media. Although social media does live, it kind of goes away for the user after a day or so. So that's one test I use for that. And then also in regards to the website, one of the best things you can do to kind of build your site is just doing a blog on whatever time schedule, you know, you feel you can commit to. But if you do a blog every week for a year, at the end of the year, you have 52 new indexable pages on your site. And that can be huge for SEO. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to make that point. Oh, that's, we kind of glossed over that.
No, it's perfect. Thank you for circling back to that. and then those blogs or whatever on the website, of course, you can always share them on social media as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like there was a phase, and maybe I'm wrong in my timing, but I would say maybe 6 years ago, 8 years ago, when social media was really kind of landing and some of the really popular platforms were becoming a mainstay, that some of the thinking was, you don't need a website, just do everything on social. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that is true or holds any credibility. Any thoughts around that as, of course, a lover of websites and doing what you do? But was that a phase? Is it still a thing?
I think that was a phase. And I mean, I think what a main difference in my mind is I can control everything that's on my website, but I can't control everything that's on social media. And someone could make a comment that I don't agree with on in response to something. There's just things maybe you don't want to see again and it doesn't go away. And I like that you can have a website where you can be in control of the content and you're not at risk for Facebook shutting you down or getting hacked from that angle of social media, which happens a lot. But on the website, though, if you do get hacked, we can recover and just, you know, go back to how it was. Because we have, especially with our maintenance plan, we have nightly backups. I always see a need for a website for a company. You need to have your own space.
I agree, especially for an established professional business, right? Whether it's brick and mortar, it's a product or a service. Social media is great, but you've got to own your digital space. Yeah, very good.
Absolutely.
So tell us how we can find you. I believe it's hammersmithsupport.com.
You are correct.
Yes.
And there is a link on my homepage for scheduling a consultation if any of your listeners would like to schedule some time with me. And on Instagram, hammersmithsupport, and I'm on LinkedIn, it's Heather Locke. And I should be fairly easy to find.
Well, you for sure are. And I am so honored that you were able to come and schedule more time with us. You've been on with us a couple of times before. I think most recently a guest on Kelly Lorenzen's KLM Consulting Show, which is Collaborative Connections. And I think before that, right, you and Lindsay with Ellen Grace were on together on, I think I hosted that show.
You did. Yeah, that was a really fun one too.
And am I right in thinking you've done some work with Carrie Ann Munstead too? Did she do some of your photos recently?
Yes, absolutely. She actually won an award for one of my photos that she did. I've worked with her twice. She did some professional headshots for me, and she also did some branding photography. My homepage image is from Carrie Ann Munstead.
Yeah, she's great. I just did one of her 40 over 40 photo shoots and loved every minute of it. And she was just so fantastic to work with. So good. We got a lot of shout outs in today. John Ray and all the girls. I love it. So fantastic. Heather, thank you for being with us. It's been an absolute joy to have you again today. And like you and I both said before we got online went on air, we need to get together so I can give you that true actual hug. So thank you again for being here.
I would love to.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Max 6 Entrepreneur Center. Some media leans left, some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki. Thanks for listening.